My previous job I had, well, I'm still in the same company, but the previous role I had was in something called DevOps. Now, one of the key responsibilities of DevOps is to maintain website uptime. So Mr. Link was saying that YouTube was doing maintenance, and I kind of find it hard that their DevOps team isn't going to be able to maintain their maintenance while not making sure that YouTube goes down. Now, YouTube has been known to go down. That has happened, but hopefully not. When you're in DevOps, it's quite a challenging position and a job. There is a ton to know. And depending on the infrastructure or how big your company is, how big your website is, you can think of, you know, like YouTube, like they're massive, they're worldwide. Things are very challenging at times. Now, one of the tools that DevOps teams use very heavily is monitoring. They monitor all of their systems. They monitor mundane things like heat and humidity in a data center. They monitor incoming and outgoing internet traffic. They monitor electricity. They monitor surges in internet activity. The list goes on. I mean, I could sit here all day and tell you what we monitor just at my job. Back when I was in this position, there was probably 30 to 40 web pages that I looked at when something would go wrong, and you have to kind of figure out where something was going wrong, what was going on. Now, if you've ever opened up Chrome or whatever browser you use and you start opening a bunch of tabs, you can imagine by the time, you know, I'm in my job, I've got 30 to 40 rotating tabs that I'm constantly kind of keeping an eye on. Now, in this position, there's only four people on our team right now. And so the on-call rotation was scheduled 2 weeks on, so you're on call 24/7. Thankfully, the guys I work with have been very gracious and helped me with the Sabbath. It's definitely a blessing from God. I don't discount that one iota. That's something I know that God has blessed me with. And then you have 2 weeks where you're on backup call. So if the main person who's on call doesn't get alerted or doesn't react, that alerts go to you. And then you get 4 weeks off. Let me tell you, those 2 weeks where you're on call are some of the most stressful times and nerve-wracking that you could imagine. Anything can go wrong at any point in time. And it's your ability or your, you have to figure out how to fix it. What is going on? Where's the bottleneck? Where's the issue? And I can't tell you the amount of times that I've been at our data center at 2, 3, 4 a.m. in the morning because something's gone wrong. Now, on top of all of this, like, whoa, that's not enough? No, there's more. There are, going back to the monitoring, there's error and issue reporting. And that's how you get to know about what's going on, how something is going wrong. Usually, it's a page on your cell phone, because that's when you're on call, it flips to you and it alerts your cell phone. And you know, you could end up with zero problems in a day, and those days are great. Some days you can end up with 10 to 15 to 20 problems in a day. Those days suck. Now, all of this is managed chaos. On top of all the alerting, there's emails, thousands of them. Now, a lot of these emails I dump into an automation inbox, and it's just a lot of automated emails that are flowing by. There's some days I get upwards of a couple thousand, 5,000, 6,000 emails in a day. Now, we don't look at those. Those are just automated emails. But the systems are constantly checking for errors, constantly checking for things that we've told them, the machines, to look for. Now, if the reports that we write aren't well written, that's when you often end up with a lot of false alerts, things that are alerting, but they either don't matter or, yeah, they kind of matter and you can deal with them in a, you know, time frame. In all of this, there's something that's a real danger when you're in this position. And it involves the human element, the person. See, it's so easy to get desensitized to so many alarms all of the time. In the industry, it's also known as alert fatigue. And it happens when you're exposed to large numbers of frequent alarms or alerts, and the consequence is becoming desensitized to them. You don't pay attention as well as you should. Now, this type of problem isn't just limited to now. In Aesop's fable about the boy who cried wolf, it's an example of alert fatigue. Now, in technology and other types of fields today, alert fatigue happens when you become desensitized to something because you've heard it so many times. This has happened to me before. I've been on call. I've had alerts go off. I look at them. They're like, okay, this alert isn't so not such a big deal. I can deal with this in the morning. Another alert comes in like 30, 40 minutes later. Okay, this one's, I should probably take care of it. You take care of it. Third one comes in the middle of the night. This time it's 2 a.m. in the morning. You're blurry-eyed. You're looking at your phone, and you dismiss it, right? And that third one happens to be the one that you should actually really be paying attention to, and the whole website's burning. Yes, that's happened to me. It's easy to have these alerts go off and to either take care of them or dismiss them or what have you. It's easy to just sometimes sweep them away and push them under the table. But the alerts are there for a reason. They're there to compel action in some way, shape, or form. But you have to find the right balance between a lot of alerts and the proper alerts that are needed. Now, the same issue I feel can creep into our Christian lives. How many times have we heard that Christ's coming is close? How often have we heard that we have to be on guard, that we have to be awake, that we have to be alert? How often have we heard that we don't know the actual time of Christ's return? Now, I believe this to be a fact. We don't know. None of us know. Some people like to think they know. But the fact is, though, is that we are living in an age that is quickly demolishing anything that makes any sense. And I think that God knows that there is worrisomeness in holding on to this way of life. It's something that's very real that can creep in. There are so many traps, so many failures, and so many sins for us to overcome. There are so many opportunities for Satan to take the opportunity to destroy us. You know, when we look at the update and read the things that are going on in it, sometimes it's exhausting. It's mighty hard to hold on to the truth. You know, there's some weeks when the Sabbath hits, the Friday night, and it's like that, you just feel like, oh, I can let my guard down now because I've been so busy all week fighting, dealing with everything that's coming up. And then the Sabbath hits and you're like, okay, I can relax a little bit. So how do we combat this exhaustion, this fatigue in our Christian lives? What do you do that helps lift you up, that sets you back on your feet and makes you ready to face another day? What resets you after a very trying and a very hard day at work or week? What gives you the strength to deal with people, sometimes even your own family? You know, life is not straightforward. It's not clean. It's very dirty. You have to get through life and through the mud and through the dirt. And it's frustrating at times, and it's not fair. But I think, as Rocky Balboa said, you, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That is how winning is done. So I think our approach has to be twofold. And it's based on God's principles of love. Love for man. So many things could be said here. You could do sermons on this. And so many scriptures. But I'd like to turn to Galatians 6 and verse 9 and 10. And I'll read from the NIV, Galatians chapter 6. And beginning in verse 9, it says, "Let us not become weary in doing good. For at the proper time, we will reap a harvest, if we do not give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, those things that come up in life, those things that we, and maybe only we see, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to the family of believers." If we are not diligently seeking the well-being of others above ourselves, both within and without of the church, then we are not truly showing godly love for our fellow man. We are showing selfishness. Then it becomes all about inward, me, me, me. And that alone right there, it can lead to so much fatigue and exhaustion in your life. And it doesn't seem like it on the outside. It's easy to think about yourself. But it's really when you have outward flowing love for others, that's when you start to feel better inside. You get more energy. I would like to just ask all of us to think about what this scripture here is telling us. But not just think about it. Do some Bible study. Do some research on the other scriptures that it talks about in this vein. Meditate on them. And then start taking action. Put it into example in your own life. See what happens. If it's just all theoretical, you don't try, then you'll never know. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13 and 14, also from the NIV, 1 Corinthians 16, 13 and 14, it says, "Be on guard. Stand firm in the faith. Be courageous, be strong, and do everything in love." Be on guard can also be said as be on alert. Be aware. Don't let your guard down. Don't become fatigued. But do everything in love. What does that look like in your life? I know what it looks like or what it should look in my life, but I can't tell you what it should look like in your life. You live your life. That's up to you. The second approach, also based on God's principles of love, obviously, should be our love for God, our focus on God. Focusing not just, okay, I'm going to focus for 15, 20 minutes. No, focus intently on God, on what he is doing in our lives, not leaving room in our minds for wiggle areas, but rather focus, focus, focus. I come back to this scripture quite often in my own mind, and it's Jeremiah 29, verse 13. Jeremiah 29, verse 13, it says, this is God talking, "You will seek me, and you will find me when you spend 20 minutes in prayer and then go about the rest of your day and don't think about me." That's when you're going to find me. No, it says, when you seek me with your whole heart, everything that is in you is seeking after God. That's when he's going to be found in our lives. Have you ever felt like God isn't listening? He isn't helping? He's letting you go through trials? You're getting fatigued? It means that our hearts in those situations are not fully seeking after God. Do you want to fight fatigue? Do you want to stay on guard? Do you want to stay alert? Focus on God. Love God. Love His way. Don't leave room for other things. If we will turn to Psalm 91, and beginning in verse 1. Psalm 91, and beginning in verse 1, we'll read to 16, just kind of help read this whole thing. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, my God. In Him I will trust. Surely He shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the perilous pestilence. He shall cover you with His feathers, and under His wings you shall take refuge. His truth shall be your shield and buckler. You shall not be afraid of the terror by night, nor by the arrow that flies by day, nor by the pestilence that walks in darkness, nor of the destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Only with your eyes shall you look and see the reward of the wicked. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling. For He shall give His angels charge over you, to keep you in all your ways. In their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and upon the cobra. The young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot. Because He has set His love upon me, therefore I will deliver him. I will set him on high, because he has known my name. He shall call upon me, and I shall answer him. I will be with him in trouble, and I will deliver him and honor him. With long life I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. Sure, David wrote that thousands of years ago, and I'm sure it was true at his time. But how much more apropos is it for us today? These words that are in our Bible. But again, unless David had been focused on God, on being his refuge, his high tower, his covering and his refuge, then if he had not been doing those things, God would not have said the things that he did at the very end. Brethren, we are not of those who are unaware. We have vision. We have understanding. But that opportunity to fall away is all the more prevalent because of what we have to endure. I hope and pray that each of us are truly cultivating the type of relationship that God really wants with us, that He shows us that He wants with us in the Bible. Everything that we need in that sense is in this word, but it has to be pulled out. It has to be acted upon. It has to be lived. So let's not get tired now. Let's not find a way to become fatigued, but let us be on alert, be on guard. Let us echo Paul's words. I have fought a good fight, I have finished my course, and I have kept the faith.